Our story begins on the 31st of August, 1888. The Autumn of Terror, as it was dubbed by the press, is about to begin when the first victim of the Canonical Five is murdered right here, Mary Ann Nichols. For reference, Canonical Five refers to the five women generally agreed upon as having been murdered by Jack the Ripper. There are some who believe other murder victims in the Whitechapel area toward the end of the Victorian era were also Ripper victims, but only these five are universally accepted. 43-year-old Mary was known to her friends as Pretty Polly. Not because she was beautiful, however. Without being cruel, the women we'll be discussing today were weather-beaten. A hard life of street living and alcoholism took their toll, leaving many women looking around 20 years older than they actually were. Skin disorders, missing teeth, and the ravages of outdoor living had left their toll on these women. All but one of the canonical five were in their 40s, having lived long, difficult, and often dangerous lives. Mary Ann Nichols, though, had started off reasonably well, by Victorian standards. She was married at the age of 15, but her marriage fell apart around the time she turned 29. The police report stated that her marriage failed owing to Mary Ann's, quote, excessive drinking and immoral behavior. With no more financial support from her husband and having sold all of her possessions, Mary had no choice but to sell herself to make ends meet. On the evening of the 31st of August, Mary was drinking at the Frying Pan pub, where we will take you later, and left around 12:30, wearing a beautiful new bonnet with expensive black trim that she had purchased herself, believing this might help her attract new clients. When she left the pub, she headed straight for her current accommodation, a doss house on Thrall Street. But owing to her bonnet and all the time she had spent at the pub that day, she arrived without the 4 pence needed to stay for the night. The landlord turned her away. No pay meant no stay, and this particular landlord had actually been quite generous to Mary. She already owed him money for previous nights she had stayed without paying. However, Mary wasn't concerned by this. Quote, "Look at my jolly new bonnet," she said to him. Quote, "It won't take me long to earn my 4 pence and keep my room." With that, she headed back out into the night. 2 hours later, around 2:30 in the morning, she was spotted on the Whitechapel High Street by her best friend, Ellen Holland, who found Mary so drunk she could barely stand. Ellen tried to convince Mary to go back to the Doss House, even offering to pay the 4 pence herself. Mary refused, saying, quote, "I've had my Doss money 3 times tonight." She had spent it all on gin, but reckoned it'd be easy to get the fourth. An hour later, at 3:40 in the morning, two stable hands, Charles Cross and Robert Paul, were heading to work in the pitch dark when Cross spotted something out of the corner of his eye. At first, Charles was excited, thinking he'd found something, a tarp or a bundle of rags that he could sell, perhaps. As he got closer, however, he began to make out that it was, in fact, the body of a woman, lying on her back with her legs spread and her skirts lifted above her neck. Charles wasn't sure if she was alive, dead, drunk, injured, or just sober and asleep, but he didn't want to wait around to find out. He was afraid that if he was found there, he could be implicated in a crime if it turned out the woman was in fact dead or injured. Charles and Robert decided to leave the scene and alert the first police officer they saw as they continued their walk to work. Almost immediately after the boys left, Police Constable, or P.C. Neal, arrived on the scene with his lantern. At first, he kicked Mary, yelling at her to wake up and telling her she couldn't sleep there. When she didn't move, he knelt down to pull her skirts down in an effort to protect her modesty. But when he did, he saw that her throat had been violently slit, from left to right, twice over, with the incision going all the way back through to her vertebrae. He immediately called for assistance, and the Metropolitan Police arrived on the scene. With photography unavailable, Mary Ann Nichols' body lay unmoved for 3 hours, while the police drew sketches of the crime scene. A doctor was summoned to take Mary's body away for study, and when he arrived, he noticed something a bit unusual. There seemed to have been very little blood surrounding the body, given the brutal nature of her murder. Finally, Mary's body was removed, and of course, with forensic science in its infancy, as soon as Mary's body was taken away, buckets of water were splashed all over the crime scene, erasing any clues that may have been hidden there. When her body was taken back to the lab, the doctor discovered that there was a very good reason for the small amount of blood left at the scene. This was owing to the fact that Mary Ann Nichols was wearing 9 layers of clothing. For women with no permanent place to stay and nowhere to store their belongings, wearing their entire wardrobe all day long was a necessity. And it's these many layers of clothing that had soaked up all of Mary's blood, leaving only a little left behind in the alleyway in which she was slain. As the doctor carried out the autopsy, the true extent of Mary's injuries came to light. She had been stabbed multiple times in the genital organs, and a wound created by the rip of a knife stretched from her pelvis all the way to her chest. Her skin had been pulled back, and her internal organs had been repeatedly slashed. This will soon become the calling card of Jack the Ripper, horrible mutilations with a focus on the female reproductive organs. Detective Chief Inspector Frederick Aberline is called to work on the case, and he is determined to bring Mary's killer to justice. But having retraced her steps over and over and spoken to any and everybody that had contact with her, Frederick found nobody with a bad word to say against Mary Ann Nichols. With no idea of a perpetrator or motive, an entire week passed with no progress on finding her killer. But 7 nights from the murder of Mary Ann Nichols, Jack the Ripper would strike again. Backtrack along Durward Street until you get to Valence Road and turn right. Take the first left onto Old Montague Street and immediate right onto Hanbury Street. Continue on Hanbury Street for quite some time. As you walk, you will pass Deal Street, Daplin Street, Spittle Street, and you will cross Brick Lane until you finally reach a car park on the right-hand side, opposite numbers 28 or 32 Hanbury Street. Please listen to our next clip as you walk, and we will describe what life was like for the citizens of this area 120 years ago.